You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, although recently, for various reasons, we haven't been together, but we are together today. And when I say we, I mean David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, both of whom are in Johannesburg, and I'm here in the Netherlands. And David Shapiro, I think we have to start with you, because welcome back. You've been on a lengthy field trip to the United States, and I know you've got notebooks packed with insight.
I have. I was quite conscientious in that respect, is that, you know, if I heard anything or noted anything, I'd put it down on a piece of paper, and I've got lots of scraps of piece of papers here that I have to put into a view. But there's a lot I have to say about the US, you know, having seen it from different angles as well. And not always, what's the word, complimentary. I think listening to Powell last night, I think he sums it up. He's holding back because of uncertainty really gives you a strong idea of where markets are and where the world economy is until such time as there's clarification on his policy. And it's all over the place. He's got his apologist. In fact, I can see Mr. Nudnik at the moment talking on my television screen, trying to explain how the great Trump is managing the portfolio and brilliant deals that he does. That's Lutnik, not Nudnik. Nudnik is a Yiddish word, which is not complimentary. but to an extent, I still think until such time as we've clarified, you know, they're making a big song and dance now about the deal with the UK. I think why the markets are recovered is another issue. I think a lot had to do with the fall that we saw in the market. His ratings falling dramatically and, you know, other issues. Yes, the results from tech companies help. But I think what the conclusion I've come to, and I'm taking a bit of time to get to that, is that I think he's lost his grip, Trump. I don't think he's as popular as he thinks he is. I think that America's getting bored with him. They're tired, you know, with this is the best deal that's ever been made, you know, the superlatives. And I think that this is going to start building up against him in the time to come. I think American corporates are getting angry with him, particularly those that are import from China and so on. And, you know, in a brief way, trying to get to the point, I think that he's topped out. You know, and I don't think he's going to get any more popular than he was. You know, this is the levels.
He's saying more and more bizarre things. I'm just going to stay with you, David, because you've been there for a few weeks. He's saying more and more bizarre things. Yeah. And you know, you don't have to be in America to hear them. But he said things about World War II. He said we should be celebrating this Victory Day. And he said that America was the greatest factor. The World War II was won by the Allies because of the United States of America, the strongest, most brilliant militarily, and 250,000 troops died, etc. And I thought to myself, on VE Day, with King Charles and Queen Camilla in Westminster Abbey, they've probably read these things. I think how disrespectful to take credit for something. I mean, yeah, obviously the Americans came in and they helped after Pearl Harbor and everything, but to be so vainglorious, I found a bit offensive actually as a British person.
Let Viv talk and I'll come in afterwards.
Viv?
I'm a ratchet tutor about World War II. Do you guys know that for every single German that the Americans, French, British, and the Allies combined killed, the Russians killed 8?
You know, lost 8.
Really?
Lost 8.
No, killed 8. They lost way more than 8.
I see what you mean.
They lost way more than 8. Their ratios of deaths to German kills were like horrendous. I mean, they lost, you know, an unbelievable number of people, 25 million people or so, in a population that wasn't that large. But I mean, in terms of like the biggest concentration of the German military was always fighting the Russians. D-Day was not actually it was not an important factor in the war. It was more a case of the Americans and the British wanted to get to Germany before the Russians did, because by that time the Russians were already steamrolling towards Germany. And so, I mean, the Russians, like, I mean, I'm not saying Stalin was a good person. Stalin was as Stalin, Mao, and Hitler are up there as the three, you know, almost tied for most evil people in the last, you know, couple hundred years at least. The Russians paid a huge price for World War II. Yeah. The Americans, you know, it's called were not as important for the war as the Russians were. Let us be like very clear about that. I'm very fervent about the idea that, you know, the Russians basically won World War II. They definitely sacrificed the most and they killed the most people. Yeah. So,
it's without getting into too much history. It's a very important point you make, because when they met, when Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin met in Tehran. You know, they later met in Yalta to carve up Germany. But, I mean, this was before that, because Stalin was getting very angry. I don't know if he was there or whether he sent message, whatever it was. He was getting very angry that he was losing so many people and they were messing around and not making invasion plans. He needed that second front. And they were forced to, you know, they were forced to do something. But, I mean – it's a fascinating subject to understand. And Lindsay, to be honest, when you read about the American generals, yes. Go read about them in Italy, go read about them. You know, they hated the British. They fought with Montgomery. I mean, there was huge tensions between Eisenhower and Montgomery. But when you read, you know, the history, the messes that these American generals made, the only decent one was Patton. I mean, but the rest,
that's why Hicks, if he's sacking so many of them, maybe.
I would disagree with Patton, because Patton basically, at times, just for pure ego, did actually do things that were like, no, just shot Montgomery, just shot the British. He did few things for ego. I mean, look, I mean, I've seen military studies to say that the Russian generals, you know, at the end were really, really competent in terms of what they were doing. But they were just working on a different kind of formula in terms of what they were trying to do. They just didn't care about their people as much and were willing to grind them down to get their victories in the end. But yeah, look, World War II is obviously because of the time we're talking about it. But, you know, if we are going to talk about World War II, one thing we're going to mention is the fact that we have lived our entire lives in the aftermath of World War II, where the American dominance came from that, where, you know, the UN Security Council was created after that. It does not make sense to have a UN Security Council in 2025 that does not have India on board and has basically France and the UK on board, if you think about it.
Yeah, it's very true. Times are changing and institutions are not changing with Aviv. Talking about India and Pakistan, of course, that skirmish. I mean, these skirmishes are regular. I'm not saying that this one isn't going to have the potential to flare up into something. But again, Trump said when he heard about it, he claimed that he'd heard about it before. And in fact, he'd just been told. And anyway, that's just Trump. But he says, the first thing he said was, it's a shame, but they have been fighting for decades and even centuries. Well, of course, Pakistan was only formed in 1947, August the 14th. So how they could have been fighting for centuries, I don't know. He's just unbelievably stupid, that man.
When it comes to India, Pakistan, you must understand the U.S. has been supporting Pakistan forever. When the Pakistanis lost East Pakistan, which is Bangladesh, right? Pakistan used to be East and West Pakistan, and Bangladesh used to be part of Pakistan. When the Indians helped Bangladesh get independence, the Americans sent an aircraft carrier to basically kind of stop the Indians from basically going into like Pakistan major, and basically made them, you know, kind of like agreed to like a ceasefire effectively after they had won. The Pakistanis have been much more American allies than you would think they have been, you know, considering like, you know, people like Osama bin Laden and stuff. But the Pakistanis definitely have been American allies. And now they are looking to be more Chinese allies. And apparently the Chinese are the ones supporting them. And it's never been like a case of just Pakistan versus India. It's more a case of India versus whichever superpower is working through Pakistan to kind of do whatever to them. So right now it's the Chinese, and that's the main thing here. And apparently it's disputed, but they say that the Pakistanis shot down 5 jets, which seems unlikely unless they were given better equipment by the Chinese.
That's what the story is, that they're showing off the Chinese planes and their capabilities.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Chinese are using, and here's the thing as well, beyond this, is that the real danger here is the water. So India's been trying to, they have an agreement between India and Pakistan that's been gone for years, decades, in fact, that's gone through multiple wars, and they've never touched it. Now they're touching it for the first time, which is basically the agreement to give certain rivers that start in India that go into Pakistan, give all the water to Pakistan. So even the rivers start in India, and India basically can take all the water, they give it to Pakistan. And they've never, like, abrogated that, but now they are. Okay, so that's one thing. The Pakistan can't survive without those rivers. It counts for a huge amount of their agriculture and whatnot. But the thing is that India has the same situation on the opposite side with China, with stuff that starts in Tibet, become major rivers in India. Now, if the Indians do that to Pakistan, the Chinese might have an excuse to do that to India, and then you have a real flare, because as much as they care about 26 or something people dying in a shootout, trust me, when you take away the water supply of a country, that's when you might have a nuclear war coming about.
How long ago was it? How many decades ago was it that somebody wrote a book saying the next world war will be fought over water? It was quite famous, and everyone said, yeah, right. But maybe, given what you've just said, Viv, maybe it will come to pass. Now, David, the sell-off that we saw after the so-called Liberation Day tariff moment was clawed back, and it was the best run in the US stock market for something like 21 years. Now, is it all over, or is it just a reaction to the fact that it was overdone in the first place and people are saying, OK, where to next?
I think there's a bullish case and the bearish case. I think the bullish case is that we've had very good results. You heard Powell last night talking about how solid the U.S. economy is, and there's no need for him to do anything. So underneath it is a very solid economy. But I think the one point that I think is very important is, you know, besides the corporate results, is that I think the market's beginning to discount Trump. You know, they're saying those tariff increases that he announced on April the 2nd in the Rose, none of that's going to come about. It's going to be watered down significantly. And I think because he started to lose popularity, his ratings were falling. We saw the market react viciously. The dollar reacted, bond market, whatever. I think those hurt him. He won't admit it, but those hurt him. And I think the other thing is that his attack on Powell caused also further problems. So I think I start to see him unwinding, you know, in other words, rolling back quite dramatically. And that's the bullish case. Can it continue? Yes, if he makes concessions, if he comes with a clear policy, yes, the market can continue. But the longer he delays on China, forget about the UK now. They're going to be buying Boeings and steel. I don't know what the UK does that's that important. You know, I don't know what their economy is like. Lindsay, you know more about it than I do, but I don't think it's that great. But nevertheless, he's making a big fuss about this. His main aim, the one that everybody's watching, China. And he's got to do something there.
Well, the Swiss meeting this weekend is not going to resolve that. It's more to say, look, let's get together, let's pave the way for talks. But again, he said in an interview, a live interview from the Oval Office, he said, we're talking every day. We spoke this morning, and then a couple of weeks later, he's saying, no, we haven't been talking. He said 2 weeks ago, we've done 200 deals already. I've done 200 deals, he said, 200 trade deals. And then again, this week, he said, I haven't done any deals because I don't need to do deals. Why does he behave like this? It infuriates me.
I'll give you the headline now. Mm. Trump, very close on numerous deals. That's him. And that's rubbish. That's absolute rubbish. You know, that everybody's now banging on the door wanting to do deals with him. Yes, they're going to look and say, what concessions did he make with the UK? Hmm. Was there anything worthwhile? Can we do something similar to it? But this is smoke and mirrors with him, man. It's all hubris. It's all, I don't know, you know, a bluster.
Viv,
He's got to do the Chinese deal. That's the one.
Yeah, and Viv, it does take, they say it takes around 18 months to 2 years to properly sign, seal and deliver a trade deal. And he's saying he's done 200 in 6 weeks or something. Even you, as a studious fellow, must get emotionally frustrated by this whole situation.
I think you have to understand that that's probably, I think you're looking at it from the wrong point of view. You're thinking of it like logically, it's someone trying to be an agent for the US. And I think there's an agent principle problem here you must get over. I think Trump does not want to get a deal done. Trump wants to be the person that says yes or no. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Trump, I mean, do you think he'd be happy if he gets all these deals done and spends the next 3.5 years of his presidency with nobody, like, you know, listening to him and falling away? Honestly, think about it from that point of view. You know, I honestly do think from his point of view, the more chaos there is, the more attention that's paid to him, the more he likes it.
Hmm.
I mean, I remember an interview with Charlie Munger, who recently passed away, in which he was asked about Trump as president, and the word he used, I think, was vainglory or vainglorious.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And I think that is the kind of thing you must think of in your mind. Trump is isn't quite the perfect agent of the U.S. in terms of representing the U.S.'s best interest at all times. And sometimes he's representing what he thinks is probably going to feel good for himself as well, you know, in a roundabout way. And one of the things that he would like to do is have Carney and have Starmer and have Macron and have every, like, you know, leader in the world come to him and kind of play nice, take the photos and, you know, have to listen to what he says. And I think the longer that holds out, the better he feels about things, not the worse the world economy does. You know what I mean? That's
Well, Carney certainly didn't get run over by Trump at all. In fact, I think Carney came out better. If he'd been allowed to talk, which he wasn't, because Trump just kept on and on and on. But Carney looked great. There's two leaders that have suddenly emerged in the world that I have that give me hope, and it's Merz in Germany and it's Carney in Canada. I like that. And I also like the fact that Australia said no to the right wingers and actually went even further left with Albanese's landslide victory.
The Mexican PM is also, she's okay. I can't remember her name.
It's a complicated one.
She's also a toughie.
Yeah,
she's no pushover as well. And they give him a run for his money. And I don't think he's got intelligence. You know, the only thing he can say, this is the best deal we've ever done. This, you know, he knows he's a bad boy. He's a naughty boy or something. I mean, the language he uses is almost infantile. Listen, he can keep us on the, you know, we can extend this podcast for 3 days if you want to continue along.
We haven't even touched on the fact.
I honestly believe he's being caught out and that he's just, he's just gone not a step too far. I think he's out of his depth. He suddenly finds people that are standing up to him and saying, no, you're not going to push this one that far.
Yeah, we have to draw a line under Trump now, unfortunately. We haven't even mentioned Alcatraz, and we haven't mentioned the fact that he said during the Carney interview, I'm a very artistic person, which was extraordinary. Try telling Andy Warhol that, who he commissioned to do a lot of artworks for the newly built Trump Tower, and Trump said, no, I don't like them. They don't go with my color scheme. So he's
gold.
He's really artistic.
Oval Office, you know that, in gold.
Yeah.
It's all done in gold. I mean, you know, anyway. But I want to tell you one thing, Viv. Lindsay,
mm-hmm. Yes.
I walked through the whole of New York. I walked through Boston. I did a lot of walking.
Mm.
I did not see one MAGA cap.
Very good.
I did not see one person wearing a MAGA cap. I probably, if I went to the back of those places, you know, where they sell to tourists, nobody wears a T-shirt. Nobody wears anything related to Trump.
So, yeah, misrepresentative. I think if you've gone to Missouri or Mississippi or Alabama or Arkansas or something like that, you would have probably been tripping over them. But I see what you mean.
Wonders there,
Okay, Viv, how have the tech stocks been doing? Obviously not so well, but also have recovered somewhat.
Oh, yeah, significantly. I mean, if you look at, like we talked about, one of my big holdings, Palantir, it came down in the last couple of days. But, you know, even if you had to look at it over the last, say, month or so, you're seeing huge, returns coming through on that stock up in the last month, 52%. You know, even like Tesla has come back quite strongly. It's down for the year, but it's up in the last month quite nicely. Nvidia, You know, we talked about Microsoft. The one thing I do want to point out is the fact that if you look at the companies that are doing well, the companies not doing well, a lot of the rewards are coming through, I think, from what's happening around, AI especially. So you'll have a company like Amazon doing really, really well in terms of what you think their overall, you know, performance is being. And then the market looks and says, hey, what's happening with that cloud business? And then they may be, you know, punishing the company a little bit for that, you know. And at the same time, you see other companies that have results that you think are reasonably in line, but then they see their AI sector, which is pretty much a metaphor for the, or a proxy for the cloud business here. And then they'd be rewarding the company because of that, you know, our performance. So that I think is really key. So, look, I mean, I do think that, the market is still looking beyond this current chaos. I think that if you had to look maybe 10, 20 years down the line, this period of time is going to be small, except for the fact that we had a big technological revolution happening at the time. And I mean, do you really care who was really in charge? Was it George W. Bush or Bill Clinton at the start of Google or, you know, Amazon's terms? You know what I mean? 20 years later, those companies are going to be like, you know, green great because of it. I think tech is going to be the same way. 20 years from now, you might not remember the name Trump that well in terms of like who exactly was there at the start of OpenAI's rise or, you know, whatever the new company is going to be. But you would definitely, you know, be seeing those companies dominating the world.
South Africa, David, you're probably the wrong person to go to about South Africa. So I'll briefly stick with you, Viv, on this one. We've had manufacturing output today down 0.8% year on year. We've got PMI mired below 50 and indeed below 45. So that's not good. Inflation under control. So we will get a couple of interest rate cuts, I think, this year from the South African Reserve Bank. Bank of England cut today by a 4.25%, excuse me. And the Fed last night, of course, keeping it on hold, which David has already mentioned. But Viv, South Africa, it's sort of treading water, isn't it?
I mean, but also you see the rand incredibly strong.
Yes.
I mean, not against the euro and the pound, mind you, but against the dollar, we are basically, you know, approaching 18 again. You know, so the that is one thing to look at. And I think that's one of the reasons we've seen, for instance, some of these gold stocks under pressure today because of the fact that, you know, obviously in rand terms, they're seeing them, you know, under a bit of issue. Look, with South Africa, I'm sadly have lost much hope for a significant recovery in this country. We've seen, you know, the change of the leadership. We've seen the GNU come into play. And yeah, there have been improvements, like we've seen load shedding, you know, diminish to a large extent, though now they say they might be coming back. But we have not seen growth recover. It's been a year and we have not seen growth recover. And for us to recover in terms of growth rates, we didn't see 3, 4, 5%, not 1.5 versus 1 or 1.52 versus like 1.32 or something like that. You know what I mean? We want to see like, you know, 5% growth rates, 3% growth rates at least. And I don't think that is foreseeable, at least in the near term for us in South Africa.
No, David, you'll probably echo those sentiments, won't you?
I've given up a long time on the SA market. You know, I don't want to take anything away by the efforts that are being made by so many businesses trying to survive or prosper in an economy that's going nowhere. But year after year, I don't know how many years, I think the only decent year we had was post-COVID, but you've got to consider the one before. So, but I mean, take that out the equation. This country's gone nowhere. And nor is there any effort to get up growth. You know, it's still, they're still so, driven by, you know, political change, political transition, those kind of ideological outlooks or strategies. And until you take that away and say, listen, we want to get this company to grow, you know, we want to get this company, this country back to where it should be, nothing's going to happen. You've got to get rid of the politics and stop worrying about quotas and things like that. I can't find anything here that really attracts my attention. I know there are some good numbers from ABM there, but I think that's all bottom line. Sorry, not top line stuff. That's bottom line. I see volumes down decent. But there's, Lindsay, there's nothing to get your teeth into here. There's no business here that's going to make it on the international stage, you know, that's going to be one that foreigners are going to want to hold. And as an emerging market, I think there's better around if you want to go into emerging markets, which is not where I want to be.
Okay. That's a good. Yeah, sorry, Viv, go on.
So, I'm going to ask David, did you see that article today about, from Ina Gondana was quoted about South Africa's highest, wealthiest people? He says there's only 2,850 people in South Africa with assets worth more than 50 million rands.
I saw that, yeah.
So, that seems a very small number.
I saw from a tax base. What the worry is that if you introduce a wealth tax, they're gone. Because most of the assets, I think he said, they're offshore.
Yeah, they're just gone. But I'm saying, think of it this way, $50 million is basic, 50 million rand, sorry, is not even $3 million.
No.
Not even $3 million. And you're talking about less than 3,000 people in this entire country have more than $3 million.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I know,
it's, we act richer than we actually are. And, I just want to mention one thing by the by, on that. Is that I always like to walk through the department stores, Nordstrom or Bloomingdale's and so on. And when we look at the luxury sector, you see wealth there, names there that don't even appear in South Africa. They wouldn't appear simply because they're beyond the pocket of anybody. Yes, you've got LVMH and you've got Gucci and places like that because they sell bags. This is at a different level. And it just exposes the wealth that is in America. They had the gala, the Met Gala, I think it was on Monday evening, I don't know, which is just something else. And you kind of see, what's the word? Just the fashions, you know, the amount of money that goes in. It's just something staggering, the amount that they actually raise, the amount of money they raise. And we're a poor nation, you know, very poor. And it's almost self-inflicted because we've allowed that to happen. But, you know, what Riff says is true. It's, we, in world terms, we're not wealthy. Our wealthy are not wealthy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that is a startling number. I didn't know that. That's a tiny amount of people. Mm. Goodness me. Okay, gentlemen, let's have a look at the markets now. The aforementioned rand brought up by Viv. Here we go. Dollar rand is 18.16, and that's a 0.5% fall for the US dollar. British pound against the rand, 24.16, and that's a 0.4% fall for the pound. And the euro has fallen against the rand to go to 20.48, which is down 0.75% for the euro. Euro dollar, 1.1275. The euro down a quarter there. Gold price in dollar terms has risen by 4.25%, $136.50, if my screen is right. Anyway, it's $33.51. Platinum still can't make it through the four-figure mark, $986. It's up a couple of percent, $20 an ounce, but not much. Palladium up 1% or $987 per ounce, nearly $10 up on the day. The oil price has been very, very interesting, especially for the inflation equation and interest rate policy worldwide. Brent crude oil at the moment having a good day for a change, up 2.5%, $62.64. And West Texas crude below 60 still, $59.71, but also having a good day, up nearly 3%. What else have we got here? Gas prices up a bit also. So the energy complex doing well, but otherwise not much. S&P 500 futures, 56.78, up 0.9%. US 10-year bond, creeping higher again, the yield that is, 4.33%. South African 10-year, 10.83%. And what else we got? Bitcoin. We're very close to 100,000 this morning. Oh, it's back there again now. Look at that thing. Above 100. I don't understand it. 100,770, up nearly 4%. A lot of it. Some of the major banks and Bitcoin brokers and things were all asked to get their forecast for 2025. One went as high as 500,000 in the next year, which is outlandish, of course, but none was below about 150 to 200. Viv, again, you're studious. What do you make of it?
Look, I mean, like I think I've talked to you guys before, that there's two things a country must have, which is basically a currency and an army. The only time you see a non-currency taking, you know, really being strong in any country is when that country's, you know, government is weak. That's why Bitcoin is useful in places like, you know, in Africa where you have, you know, bad governments and so on, in places in Asia, even in places like China where people want to, and Russia where people want to have ability to get their money out of the country. What Trump is doing with regards to the dollar is weakening the trustworthiness of the dollar. And the fact that he's also going after the enforcement arm of places like the IRS is significant, because the only way that Bitcoin becomes $500, $1 million and so on is because people you know, see ways to get around certain restrictions and regulations by using Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And that only happens if you think you get away with it because the government is weak. And that is to be concerned about. If the weaker the U.S. enforcement is, the stronger Bitcoin will be.
Very well said.
True, and also where they want to confiscate assets, where there's a fear that the assets might be confiscated, as you say, by the IRS, etc. You know, the Russians at the time of the Ukraine or the war, everybody started to, you know, when you started to take away Russian assets, that's when they started to buy things like Bitcoin or gold, you know. So, there is, as long as Trump's around. I'm just watching him through the corner of my eye give this press conference and the headlines that come there. You know, the whole thing is, it's just everything he makes up on the trot. I don't think there's anything substantial to the headlines that are coming. And I mean it.
No, I agree with you.
And in any case, you know, on a parting note on this, I think all these trade deals, you know what happens? They make their deals. There's no detail to it. And there's a commitment now to buy $10 billion worth of Boeing. Who's going to buy that? British Airways? That's an independent company. You know, who's going to do it? Do you know what I'm saying? They've got no control. The British government does a deal with the American government. Up the end, it's up to the companies themselves to do it, you know, unless there's something very attractive for them to buy Boeing. So at the end of the day, I think all of these things just evaporate. They evaporate into the ether. You all make these deals. Everybody feels happy and nothing's done.
Yeah, the reason
so cynical.
The reason the UK have done it is because, first of all, the tariffs that were imposed upon the UK were nothing compared to other countries, particularly China, obviously. And also, Sir Keir Starmer is a simpering sycophant and he's touching his arm and everything when he meets him, Trump, that is. And he says, here's an invitation to meet the king, and you can stay at Balmoral and everything. And so Trump says, oh, that's good. We'll give you a favorable trade deal and you'll be first. But that's the only reason. It's not consequential. It really isn't. I mean, first, for some British businesses, yes. But if you really want to know what's going on with trade, I don't know where you can get it, but I saw a very decent mini documentary about the recent movements of trade through the Los Angeles port. Not looking good whatsoever. The containers coming in from China half full, 35% down on the number of containers coming in.
Yeah.
So keep an eye on that. That'll tell you what's going on with trade and tariffs, I think. Los Angeles.
Wait until the dock workers who voted for him suddenly find that they're out of a job. You know, and up in Seattle and all the other places, all the other ports. It's exactly right.
Mm.
When he starts to interfere with trade from China and the ships are not coming in, as you say, believe me, there's going to be consequences. So it's a very good point you brought up there,
On the JSE today, on the upside, AB InBev, you mentioned that, David, 1.8% higher. MC Group, MultiChoice, up 1.7%. That's done absolutely nothing since Canal Plus started nibbling away. Good luck with that. Mondi up 1.25%. Datatech up 1.1%. Sappi on the downside was down over 10%, closed down just around about 9%. Premier down 4%. Harmony down 4%, Telkom down 3%, and Vodacom down nearly 3% as well. So steady as she goes, gentlemen. What do you think, Viv? You're just sticking to your guns, yeah?
Look, I am. I think that, in fact, I'm doing a presentation really soon about AI, and I've just looked at the stuff coming out here. It's the technology continues to improve gangbusters. And the one thing I point to you is this, right? As big as the internet was, right, the internet was about communication. There's no way communications is as important as transport. And we're about to have transport being revolutionized in the next couple of years. Waymo is doing 1.3 million trips a month, okay? I mean, you can imagine that you in your entire life have not taken 1.3 million trips. And Waymo is doing that every month. And the 1.3 million trips, what that translates to is that these guys are able to do that much travel with almost no incident that we know about. There's no big stories about Waymo crashing, Waymo doing this, Waymo doing that. That kind of makes me think that the technology is mature. And if that is true, and we are seeing driverless vehicles coming into play in a real big way, expect something at least as big as the internet revolution. Because think about it, the number one job in the world is driver. Forklift driver, truck driver, ship driver, plane driver, you know what I mean? Mm. And it seems right now that that is something that AI has conquered, shockingly enough.
Mm. Okay, well, good luck with the presentation, David.
Yeah.
What are you up to?
Hey, I'm still madly positive on AI, and I think that's the only thing that will keep America great. Forget about Trump. You know, it's only going to be the big tech, the mega tech companies. Yeah. So, you know, and you saw their results, and I think they're going to continue. Jensen Huang has become my hero, although he's trying to creep up Trump's backside. You know, that hurt me, but I forgive him. I think he's still got a brilliant company, and I think the speech that he made talking about where tech's going and how important it is to have data centers, to have the power driving those data centers, I think is very important, you know, and that will define who America is, because with the AI that Viv was talking about, you need the data centers, you need that kind of data, and you can only do it if you expand and don't weaken that area. So I think that's still going to be the future, and as Viv says, within a year from now, slightly over, when they have the midterms, unfortunately, Mr. Trump's going to have no power, because for whatever reason, the Democrats will come in, even though they're weaker than even the Republican Party is at the moment.
Okay. On that note, gentlemen, thank you very much. Welcome back, both of you. And we'll reestablish ourselves as a trio. Same time next Thursday for the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.